Yeah, hello everyone. It's Dr. Joanna Dahlketter with Performing Edge Coaching International, and it is September the 12th, 2019, today. And so today we are going to be talking about self-assessment tools. We talked about this a little bit last time, and so just kind of doing a part two on this. Questions that your athletes can ask themselves so you can teach them to do their own self-assessment. And I have a case study example of one athlete I'm working with that I'm using some of these questions with that I can share with you. And if you have athletes you're working with, or musicians, or business people, performers, you can always share those examples too and with your questions. I always welcome your questions. And so we have new, some tools I wanted to share with you and how to teach them how to check in with themselves. And also you can use these for yourself as a coach to check in with yourself at how am I doing as a coach too. Can talk about maybe you want to put your phone on mute because there seems to be a little background noise. Just push just star 6, and then if you want to comment, then just press star 6 again to unmute. That would be great. Thank you. And so I've got questions for assessing your readiness and questions for the evaluation of your mental preparation. Excellent questions, and then lots of general questions too that athletes can ask themselves. So I think it's really good when you just, as opposed to just saying a statement to yourself, another way is to ask questions that really make a huge difference and can really bring out that feeling inside of kind of digging deeper and seeing, am I really ready here? What do I need to do in this situation? Am I prepared? What else do I need to do? That kind of thing. So, these questions can help in managing your mind and body and emotions and helping you evaluate before you start an event, and then different ways to check in with yourself during your event as well, and then reflections after your event, and the kind of end-of-season questions, too, reflections on how do things go, what do I need to improve for next time, what do we need to celebrate that went really well. So, just check in with each of you and see, do you have any particular questions or thoughts that, and then I can address those, as we go along here. I think you can best start if you muted yourself to unmute.
Well, yeah, I guess I would just start by saying I love the idea of this. I think it really helps over time. And I recently had my athletes write their zones down for their race that they were involved in with the cross country race. So we broke it down into 4 zones, and what I asked them to do is just simplify it by addressing one zone in that race that they wanted to try to focus on and improve so it wasn't as overwhelming. And after the race, they wrote an evaluation of their race, just talking about whether or not they're able to accomplish that goal for that particular zone, how they felt about it, and then what they plan to do the next time. One of my athletes, she told me that just having that one zone to focus not on and realizing that the other zones kind of took care of themselves for her made her realize that she didn't have to worry about as much as she was worrying about. So that seemed to really help, and I like the idea of just kind of worrying early, and then when you're done racing, just evaluating so you're already preparing for the next time.
Yeah, you talked about 4 zones. Can you give an example? What were the zones?
Yeah, so the first one, we call it the Grello Zone, and the Grello Zone is when the race first starts, they it's a green zone and a yellow zone because they're going to get out good. They're going to go out hard in the first, we say the first 7 seconds is free, right? So just get out hard because your body, you can go out and sprint out from the start of the race. As long as you settle in after about 6.5, 7 seconds, then it's not going to take anything from you to do that. Then you have to settle into your rhythm. So that's when you start to hit your yellow zone and start to find your pack and your place in that next yellow zone. So that's just the yellow zone there. They kind of find a good rhythm. I instruct them to focus on their breathing patterns there so they can just kind of calm down. They have specific breathing patterns that work for them. And then we just kind of work into the next zone, which is more of our passing zone, where you take some chances. And that's kind of in the next third of the race, where they're just going to try to pass people. They're going to try to make some moves and take some chances. And then, you know, finally, at the end is more of their red zone, and that's just kind of the guts and glory part. All those things have been done. You've done your job. Now you're just, you know, going off of adrenaline a little bit more. You're going for your best effort, but you've kind of put it all out there. And the red zone is just the end of the race. So when we break it down like that into four zones, it just kind of helps my athletes realize that it usually just comes down to one zone that they need to focus on, because the other zones they usually have done pretty well in. So it just makes it a little bit easier. Sometimes it's just something as simple as I don't get out as good as I should, thinking that I'm not a sprinter, and really if I just got out a little bit faster, I'd be able to get into a good group, into a good pace before I get stuck in a single track on a cross-country course behind people that are slower than me. Or I need to just, you know, focus on passing more people in my blue zone, and I haven't been doing that. So, you know, it just breaks it down, makes it a little more simple to focus on one thing instead of, you know, the entire 5,000 meters at once.
Okay, great. Yeah, thanks, Matt. And I know someone else just joined us, too. Who just joined us?
Hi, it's Michelle. Sorry for Michelle. My tardiness.
Oh, that's fine. Yeah, welcome. Yeah, glad you're here. Yeah. So, yeah, we've got Michelle, and we've got Alicia from Italy, and Matt, and other people listening in. So so let me just, so we can, did anyone else have questions or comments that you want me to address during our talk here?
Good to have you again, Michelle. This is Matt.
Hi, Matt. Thanks. Nice to hear from you.
You too.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let me just go ahead with some of the things I want to present. And yeah, you can put yourself on mute, star six, if you can, and then I'll we'll check in a few minutes about your questions or comments, too. So, I just wanted to do a part two of the questions to ask yourself, and Matt, you had some good things to say there, asking yourself how you're doing in each of divide your race or your event up into zones and see how I'm doing in the, you know, the yellow zone and the mid zone and the other zone. If you could put your phone on star six for mute, because there's a little bit of background noise, that'll make our recording better. Thank you. Yeah, that's good. Oh, and did someone else just join us too?
Yes, hi everyone. This is Evan.
Oh, hi Evan. Yeah, glad to have you here. Yeah, that's great. So I was just getting into our content here with questions to have your athletes ask themselves. And I just wanted to share some things, some sort of excellent questions, questions for excellence that you could ask your, have your athletes ask themselves. Things like, why do I play? Why do I do this sport? You know, is it the sheer nature of the competition that drives me? Some people really like the competitiveness. Some people say, you know, is it the social aspect, being with my friends? A lot of people really like that part the best. Some of people just like the, is it the love of the game or the race? Asking, you know, that part, you know, what you could ask another way, what attracted you to your sport? And another way of asking is maybe did your siblings play, or do your siblings, your brothers and sisters play a sport as well, and you're sort of following in their footsteps? Sometimes that's, there's a role modeling that goes on there, or sometimes a peer pressure to be as good as your siblings. That can be helpful or difficult depending on the situation. And then is playing sports fun for me? You know, we talked about the fun factor before. That's really important to say. Am I having fun with this? Is it how does it make me smile and keep moving forward? So those are some questions for kind of starting out. You know, with asking why you play, and then here's a difficult question you could ask your clients to ask themselves: can I accept the possibility of not accomplishing what I want? You know, like that might happen. And so, you know, sometimes athletes are coming in not accomplishing what they want, and so you have to ask: do you understand there's no guarantees for success or winning? That things can go either way. There's a lot of uncertainty with sports, and that's part of the game. And you could have them ask, can you accept the importance of the process? You know, just thinking about the process, not just the results, but you know, thinking about how's my form, how's my breathing, how's my technique, how's my getting in the zone, all those kinds of things, and not just, you know, the score. And so being able to think about the, you know, the journey rather than just getting the destination, that's really key for athletes to learn. And then, you know, just asking, can I place more value on what I learned and develop on the inside rather than just what I gain on the outside? So thinking about what it is, you know, that you're learning each time. And that's one of the things that we can do so well as performing edge coaches, I think, is to develop that learning process and asking athletes, what are you learning from this particular session, from this game, from this event that you're in? And I wanted to share just a brief example, a case study of an athlete that I'm starting to work with now, who is, you know, asking himself some important questions. He's doing lawn bowling, lawn bowls, which, you know, you might think, wow, that's a sport that, you know, doesn't, you know, people don't take too seriously, or maybe the really older people do. And, but actually it's a very serious a sport that people compete in for big money around the world. And I didn't know much about the sport actually myself. So here's an example of, you know, you may get athletes that come to you that where you don't know that the sport that well. And so it's just a matter of asking them questions, asking them to get into their experience with you. And very quickly you can learn. You don't have to know all the technique or all the specifics. You can begin to learn the language of the sport as you go along. But it's the good thing about what we do is that no matter what the sport is, there's the same principles apply of, you know, that athletes wanting to have the confidence, having those self-doubts and fears and reacting to what's just happened to them. And so he said that, yeah, his focus is really variable, and that, and so we ask, you know, one of the questions I had him ask himself is, what do I do when I make a mistake and lose focus? So he asked himself that, because that was a central thing that he has trouble with, and he says, oh, well, when I do that, I say to myself, okay, make sure you don't do that again. Don't do that particular mistake. He says, I overcorrect and I'm overthinking and focusing on don't do that thing, like shooting the ball way to the right. So then I shoot the ball way to the left and overcorrect. And so he says, I need to go back to what I normally do and don't think about the how, all the technique, but just, you know, just not, better to not do not thinking, not just doing, and trust that this is easy, this is fun, that's when he says he plays the best, so looking for ways to, so we look for ways to work with that. And in his sport, he said there's too much time. We talked before about in one of our calls here about the in-betweeners and what to do in between. So he says, it depends on the game itself. If it's a big match, then it's on TV. The game is faster. There's not much time in between, and that's better in some ways. But if it's a lower level match, they're not on TV, then he can take a walk. He can go slower. He could run to the restroom and put water on his face to kind of wake up. So there's different things you can do in between that can help with sort of resetting the mind. And so so that was an example of talking about how to deal with the distractions and the mistakes that can happen. And this particular athlete, he's older now. He's played ever since he was 10 years old, lawn bowls, and discovered he was really good at it. So, but with the mistakes, that was an important thing to ask. You know, he says he worries about the past and needs to stay mentally in the moment. And so I ask him, well, let's talk about, you know, ask yourself, what's something I could do after a mistake, something in particular? So, and I ask, rather than me telling him, I ask him to develop something. Think about that as a piece of homework between the session one and session two. What's something you could do after you make a mistake? It's a really good, I think, question to ask your athletes, I think. And so then in session two, he came back and said, well, I usually, after a mistake, I throw a rag. He has a rag in his pocket for, you know, wiping off the sweat, and he just throws his rag down, a burst of energy, letting that anger out. But that lets the opponent know that things are getting to you. And sometimes the opponent can take off and really energize his opponent that way. So he said, what he'd like to do, try doing is now is holding his, he said, I want to hold my hand like a bat, and, it kind of looks like I'm stretching, but hold my hand like a bat and then just kind of swing the cross like I'm knocking it out of the park, knocking that past shot into the past. And so, so that was something he came up with to be able to handle, to answer that question, what's something I could do after the mistake? So he's going to try that this week and make that a habit and sort of practice that and be able to say that inside in the internal monologue too. Say, I'm knocking it out of the park, or I'm knocking that thing away. And also we talked about what's something you could do when you're angry and, you know, those feelings inside. So that's another question to ask. How do I respond when I'm angry, when I'm frustrated with what just happened? And we talked about taking a little mental vacation. I asked him where he likes to go for a vacation. He said Maui, and swimming and snorkeling with the sea turtles and the reefs and the fish. And so I talked about how you could take a really short, I mean, it could be 5 seconds, 10 seconds, just go on this little mental vacation inside to kind of switch gears and change the channel in your brain and just think of something totally different to get your mind off of what just happened. And then be able to, I said, you know how you feel refreshed after a vacation? Well, you can feel refreshed after this mistake and then come right back into the game feeling more focused. So, and it's like the pendulum that swings toward the right toward peak for performance, then you swing toward the left to relax and take your little mental vacation, and then you can, the pendulum can swing back toward having another good performance. So, yeah, and then I talked about the idea of a camera. He works at Google here, so and uses an Apple, an iPhone, and like a lot of people do. And with most of the smartphones now, when you take a picture of someone, you know how you put your finger in the middle to focus on the target or the person that you want to take a picture of. You tell the camera, okay, focus here, and so we put your finger in the middle, and then this little yellow square comes up telling the camera, okay, make this the foreground and make everything else the background. And so in a way, we can do that with our brains, have our own little mental camera do the same thing, because we can only really focus on one thing at a time. And so imagine yourself, pressing your finger to that center of the, and telling your brain, okay, focus here. And most of the time, you know, after he was having the problem with the mistake, the brain's focusing on that mistake, the mistake. Don't do the mistake again. And so that was in the foreground, everything, and all the good stuff is in the background, whereas we want to switch that around and put the mistake more into the background and let that fade away. So you need to put something else in the front and say, you know, okay, focus, next shot, make that the focus. So that can be a helpful analogy, a camera, sort of the camera in our brain, treating that the same way as we do taking a picture with our smartphones, because everyone's used to doing that now. So so that's one example of you asking a question like a mistake. And then, you know, another, I wanted to talk about some types of questions that you can ask. And when you're in the middle of a game, let's say, or you're, like with a golfer that I'm working with, a 15-year-old golfer, we talked about what's too little and what's too much information for me. So, you know, with golf, there's so much information that you have to analyze right there with each shot, and you're doing a pre-shot routine and thinking about the hole. So that's a good question to ask. What's too little? What's too much information for me? So they can sort out just maybe the one or two things that they have to focus on, so there isn't too much. And asking a question like, what's important that I can do to make a good decision about the shot? So what's important to make that decision? So just focusing on what it is that's important and what's not important. And here's another good question with sort of that decision, that thought process that athletes need to go through before a shot of some sort. How do I listen to my gut, my heart, in making the decision? So you got all this information inside, and you're, you know, the left brain is processing this, and you're very analytical. And but then ultimately you need to just listen to your gut, your heart. So that's, ask your athletes to ask themselves, how do I know that I, and how could I listen to my gut and heart in making each decision? So it might be, you know, they might feel, you know, a pounding in the heart if something's making them nervous, or it might be to a scattered brain if there's too much information, or something might feel just right in their gut. So it's good to know, each person is different, so finding out what it is that they need to address, or how their body and mind can check in with the body, mind, with the gut, and the heart to see what's the best decision to make. And here's a good question also that we worked on. How do I know when I don't trust a decision, like, you know, how do I know that this just isn't right, that I shouldn't be doing this, I should be doing this other thing? So how do I know when I don't trust a decision and ask them to, you know, write the answers down or to tell you? These are good questions for discussion. And I'll send you these two next time on our email. And what do I need to do to create a good state of mind? What do I need to do to create a good state of mind for playing well? So those are really good questions to kind of ask yourself. Regardless, those were specific to golf, but they can be any sport, really. Another thing that you can ask, well, so those are some questions that I just wanted to share with you first, and then let me just check in with all of you and see what questions you have and how any of those things might relate to you and the athletes that you're working with. So if you're on mute, you can just press *6 and open up your phone and let me know what thoughts or questions you might have or how that relates to your people you're working with. Anyone can jump in? Are you guys there?
Yeah.
Can you
hear me? Yeah, this is Matt. I guess I'll jump in. I just would like to ask, I guess, the group or just whoever wants to jump in here, but when you're dealing with athletes who have had a more long-term slump, right? They've been dealing with something chronically over maybe not just a few weeks or months, but for a few years. I think that's where it can be a little bit harder to turn things around, but does anybody have any tips or success stories or tales of the tape there that were able to turn around more of a sort of chronic, long-term, closed mindset thinker? I think especially when it comes to sports like you're talking about, Dr. Joanne, where, you know, just one play makes a big difference. And I think that's where a lot of great athletes end up really suffering. I think it's a little easier in the beginning, in the earlier stages, to catch that stuff. But sometimes I'm getting athletes that have been dealing now with for years, and so it's it doesn't have as much effect when I talk about these same tips that I generally give, and I feel like they're just in that negative space, and they've just lost belief, and they don't bet on themselves anymore.
Yeah. Okay. You got some funny sounds from your line. It's a little bit hard to hear you, but if you want to mute your phone, just put *6 so that you can so we can hear, because it seems to be maybe it's if you're traveling. Matt, can you press *6 on your phone?
My phone's muted. I'm in my office. I think it's somebody else there.
Oh, okay. Yep. Yeah, can everyone sort of press *6 there's some kind of strange sound. There, that's better. Thank you. A background
Dr. Joanne?
Sound. Yeah. Hi, Michelle. Go ahead.
Hi. I have a response for Matt. I had a marathoner a couple of years ago who was in a slump, and then I did a peak performance visualization with her and really emphasized a time that she really performed well, but that she really loved the experience, and to just get back to that place of joy and fun in her sport. And she'd actually was in a hiatus from marathon running when she came to me, because she didn't want to do it anymore. She hated the pressure. She wasn't getting good times. And then she just stopped. And she didn't even come to me for that. It was something else. But we ended up doing this visualization of her doing the Victoria Marathon. And she got really into it, describing it to me, like, where I felt like I was in that run with her, and the happiness she felt completing the race and doing really well. And she emailed me after that session, and she started running again, and then she started competing again, and she just needed to be reminded of how much she loved her sport.
Oh, great. Yeah. That's a really great answer. Yeah, I was thinking of that too, to think of, ask the athlete, what had first attracted you to your sport? Or
would you mind maybe sharing, like, what was the visualization that that helped her? Or I know you said you brought her back to a time when she loved her sport more. She was, you know, where she was thriving. But do you have an example of that, or just you know, what you feel like helped really make that turnaround?
Yeah, well, she, you know, with Dr. Joanne, she always says bring in as many senses as possible. And so with a peak performance, it's generally a happy memory because they did well. But I got her into just describing to me what, you know, what the smells were. And she described the ocean air and the quality of the air and the temperature and what it felt like. And then she talked about the power in her legs. So it wasn't, she wasn't talking about outcome or result or anything like that, but more body associations, emotions, you know, what did she have a smile on her face? Who was cheering her on? And it just, you know, I still get goosebumps when I think about it. So it was more about the emotions and the physical sensations of that run as opposed to results.
Yeah, great. Thanks, Michelle. And yeah, that's a really great thing to bring in all the senses, like we talk about, and to think about the all the details of what was happening at that time, and really get into that. Yeah, make a visual, creative, have them, you know, give you all that information about the time that they felt really good, and then create a custom visualization audio, like we talk about in module 2 and 3 of the program here, and then create a custom visualization they can use over and over again. And it doesn't have to be just one peak experience or one good experience too. You could, you know, each time they might have 2 or 3 of them, really good ones. And so, because it might be repetitious to keep thinking of the same one over and over again. The mind needs some variety, so you can think of, you know, ask them what's another time when you felt really good, and ask them to describe that, and then make another visualization for that, so they have a menu of things to choose from. And there might be different things that they refer to. You know, they always think of it's always so powerful in their legs. Or yeah, another athlete might think of a bird and feel like it helps them feel lightness in their legs. So yeah, those are good. And one suggestion I have is break. Sometimes if an athlete's, yeah, just chronic long-term issues, sometimes they just need a break, a short break maybe from their sport. And it can be an active, the athletes hate taking the word break or taking off from the sport, but you could phrase it in terms of an active break, to, you know, take a little, you know, a few days or a week to do something different. And instead of running, they could be swimming or cycling or some other sport that complements what they're doing. And oftentimes it really brings back so much. All of a sudden they have this hunger to do their sport again after they've taken a short break. So yeah, that's a really good thing that you can do too, to take an active break where you aren't just a couch potato, but you're actually out there doing another sport. It could be hiking too. Sometimes the athletes are injured and they have a forced break, of course, and so they you know, they get a jump in the pool, do something else, and then it creates this joy for getting back in their sport. And another thing I thought of, Matt, is you're just asking yourself, what's the best version? You could ask the athlete to ask, what would the best version of me do in this situation? You know, the best version of, if her name's Sally or something, just to say what the best imagine the best version of yourself, and how would you respond to this situation. You could ask it that way, or you could also ask, what if you were coaching yourself? You know, you picture yourself as an outside person coaching someone else, especially women and guys too. We're often good at better at you know, coaching someone else to solve a problem. So say you know, describe it as, let's say that somebody else had this issue, and then have them coach that person. What advice would you give them? And then all of a sudden they come up with all kinds of things that they might have not thought of for themselves, and then realize, okay, now you can apply that to yourself. Yeah, did someone else just join us, or maybe I think someone left the line and then came back?
Yeah, I came back, Dr. Jen. Sorry, the line got cut off. Dr.
Okay.
Jen, I have a couple of questions for you. When I can ask you, just let me know.
Okay, go ahead. Yeah.
Well, the first question is about the visualization. I just have a doubt. If the our clients do the visualization about peak performance or another positive experience, and anxiety kicks in, and there are some disturbing factors, disturbing memories, or like intrusive thoughts, would you during the visualization tell your clients how they would address, you know, that interference, or would you just how would you manage that, you know, if there is an intrusive negative thought or image?
Yeah, that's a good question. So just make sure everyone heard the question. So with visualization, what if someone has some disturbing memories, how to manage that?
Mm-hmm.
And I'd say, we're actually worked in a women's hospital for a few years, where most of the women had been sexually abused or had some abuse of some sort, and so they had difficulty with that. The question you're asking was doing visualization. Whenever they would close their eyes, they would see upsetting memories or trauma. And so what I did was have them just, when they're in the room there, just have them keep their eyes. I said it's okay to keep your eyes open and just focus on something distant in the room, you know, a picture on the wall or something, so that, and they felt safer doing that because they thought if they closed their eyes, yeah, something, those memories come back. So sometimes having their eyes open, there's no magic to closing your eyes. It's okay to keep your eyes open, and just as long as you're it is focusing on one thing in the room. Sometimes in your room you could have a particular object, a ball or a picture or a nice relaxing scene or something, and they could focus on that, and that can help to take them to and feel safer, and also letting them know before you start the visualization, giving them a signal saying it's okay if you have if something comes up that where you don't you have a disturbing memory or something's getting in the way, you can just put up your finger raise your hand and let me know, and we can just stop the visualization and just talk about it. So letting them know that they're not stuck, you know, in this visualization process, that it's okay to stop in the middle and kind of talk about the memory or something that they have, and then when they're ready, go return to the visualization. Sometimes
Dr. Jen, sorry, I'm thinking that probably I wasn't clear with my question. Sorry, I don't mean in terms of like traumatic memories. I just mean like more sort of distractions, because I have one of my athletes, for instance, she's always worried about like making mistakes in what she does. Like, for instance, she plays volleyball, and when she has to serve, she's worried that the ball will end in the net. And so when I tell her to do the visualization at home about, like, either a peak performance or about her managing to throw the balls across the other, you know, the other volleyball field, the other across the net, and maybe do a score, something like that. She has some, like, she doubts herself, so she keeps having some thoughts like, oh, what if I make a mistake? What if I fail like the other time? And so when she does the visualization at home, she has this interference. And so I wonder whether she should visualize, carry on with the visualization as if it was successful, or if she has, during the visualization, address the fear. What would she do, for instance, if she fails? What would she, do you, am I making myself clear?
Yeah, I understand. Yeah, to see it, see herself doing it success. If she has worries, should she see herself successfully doing it, or address the fear? I think both are important. Actually, you can't do them each separately. But if it, it depends on the severity of the fear, I guess if it's so strong that it's getting in the way of the visualization, then it's good to then talk about the fear first, and say, what do you fear, and what's the worst thing that could happen, just so she can verbalize that, and then say, be able to talk about the those worries, and she might not have ever had a chance to express those, and oftentimes just processing it through can really help to, you know, to deal with the fear. A lot of times people are just a fear of looking stupid or looking at or embarrassing themselves. So it's good to just get out what it is that they're exactly afraid of. What would happen if it goes into the net? Sometimes if their parents are there, they're afraid of letting down the parents, or letting down a coach, or letting down the team. So it's good to just talk about that ahead of time, and just talk about all the things that they are afraid of, and then be able to kind of work with each thing, I think, and say it's kind of like the camera, being able to put, as you talk about them, hopefully they, you know, can say, put those things into the background and put, and then just be able to go and approach, say, doing a serve, and be open and be curious, have a different attitude about it, be curious about what would happen if I served really well, or what are the different ways that I could play. And let's, you know, say, give her some, you know, maybe some words, or she could come up with an affirmation, you know, let's see how well I can do with this serve, and change it from, you know, it'd be good to think of the words, ask her what words is she using now, like, oh my God, you know, this is, I'm afraid this, I'm going to mess up, is probably, you know, the negative thought that she's coming up with, or something like that, or I'll let people down, and have her write that down on the left side of a page, see all her negative thoughts, and then on the right-hand side, be able to write a power word or positive reframing of that, and say, what's the opposite of that? Or if you were coaching that person, what would they say? What would you like to say? Just focus on this one shot, just this shot. I can do this. This is fun. And I'm good at this. I'm in my element. Ask her what she love, like Michelle was saying, ask what do you love about serving, about being playing volleyball, and think about the time when she's served really well. So all those things can help to see. So I think it could be a two-step process. One process first, addressing the fear and talking about that, and hopefully realizing that it's not the end of the world. If she hits a bad shot, that it's a learning process, and ask. I have those 4 or 5 questions that I like people to ask themselves, like what's good about this situation. So what I call instead of asking why, questions that start with why am I such a bad player? Why does this always happen to me? Why is this so difficult? And if we ask those questions, then the left brain, that logical, analytical side, will, can tend to beat you up. But if you ask questions that start with what or how, then what I call positive action questions, then you can address that fear and so ask what's good about this situation. Okay, if I shot one, I shot it into the net, then I can, I have a chance to recover from that. See how fast I can recover. She could have her come up with answers for that, and then ask, so what's good about this situation? Then ask how can I use this to my advantage, whatever the situation is. There's always something good about what's happening, and you just have to be creative about how to respond to that, and then learn, be able to say, how can I use this to my advantage, get even better at my serve. And then the third question is, what can I learn from this? And there's always learning there, so just stretching the brain really to think in a different mode. Think about the learning from this, because usually when we mess up, that's when we learn the most. So we get to learn even more about ourselves. And then the fourth question is, how do I keep moving forward? What's the next step? What's the next step? How do I keep moving forward? And what do I need to keep moving forward? And that's hopefully working with you, Alicia, to continue with this. So if you can ask her to ask those kind of questions, then that can address the fear. And then being able to do the second step would be to see yourself doing it successfully, do a visualization about that. And actually, I think it's good to, when you have that, is to think of different scenarios with the fear. Think of, okay, here, you fear making a mistake or something. So let's imagine, a specific mistake, have her describe that, and then say, okay, now how can you recover from that? Kind of a if-then, all the if-then scenarios. So if she comes up with something, if I hit it into the net, then I can see myself, recovering and being able to hit the next one. Maybe a little more conservatively, but hit it just right on, in the right spot, that sort of thing. So come up with different scenarios. And so if this happens, then here's what I could do to recover from it. So those are kind of some ideas I had about disturbing memories. I think that that fear is just, it's basically just an emotion. It's not this horrible thing, but just taking the mystery out of it and saying it's something to learn. It's just telling us, I get to learn from this.
So basically, Dr. Zhang would entangle the fear. You will just address that, and then you'll do the visualization, just visualizing a successful performance, yeah. Right?
Right, yeah. Okay. I think that's the best way, yeah.
Okay, brilliant. Thank you.
Okay, thanks. Great question, Alicia. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, Evan, are you there too? I don't know if you had any questions or thoughts or comments. Or Evan was on the call a little bit earlier. I don't know if he had if he lost reception or something. So I wanted to give you some other questions that people could ask themselves that can really get at some improvements they can make and feel better about the sport. What are some things that you could ask them in an assessment? Do my everyday behaviors reflect my sports goals? So it's a good question to ask. Do my everyday behaviors, what I do every day, my habits, reflect my sports goals? And they might think, oh, and not getting a, I'm not getting enough sleep, so that's not taking away from the sport, or you know, eating too much, a heavy meal right before I go to bed, that's not good. You know, thinking about those sorts of things, or maybe if it's older athletes, they might be drinking alcohol or partying on the weekends. And so it's good to think about those patterns and how, you know, your personal life, and then how is that reflect, is that helping or hurting your sports goals? So that's a good question to get into their everyday behaviors. And then asking, how would the most committed version of myself behave? So thinking of yourself as a new version of yourself, a better version of yourself. How would the most committed version of myself behave? And just that would be you could do a whole visualization around that. Visualize the most committed or the most motivated or most excited version of yourself, and how would that person behave, and what would they do? So you could do a whole visualization on that, and ask them to a whole session talking about that. They're maybe they would be able to turn down. They might have to turn down opportunities to do a party on the weekends, or go or staying up late. So that they could, be way awake for their practice in the morning, that kind of thing. And you could also ask them, what would the most confident version of myself, how would that person behave? How would the most confident version of myself behave? And see themselves kind of almost like a different, like a new person, and visualize that person. And you could, if they have trouble seeing it as a person too, you could do a visualization about it, seeing themselves as an animal, let's say a tiger, or if they want to be more aggressive, they might see themselves as a lion, a tiger. If they want to be faster, they might visualize themselves as a cheetah. So you could do an animal version, and then pick an animal that embodies the things, the qualities that they would like to have. So those are some really good questions to do a session and a visualization on. And then asking, what do I need most from my coach to ensure I'm achieving most of my goals? So that's a good question to ask them, what do I need most from my coach? And that could be their athletic coach, their physical coach that they're working with, and then also ask them, what do I need from my sports psychology coach, which is you, to achieve my goals. So that's kind of a process question that they could ask, and then that could give you good feedback about where to go next in your sessions with that person. So those are good questions to be able to ask your athletes, so that you know that you're going the right direction with them. And here's a tough question for physical things. What increases the chances of me getting injured? It's like, oh man, I don't want to answer that. that's a really hard one. What increases the chances of me getting injured? So that it's a question that every athlete does, kind of tries to avoid. But by answering that, you can come up with, okay, when I do two hard workouts in a row, to write those things down helps them to avoid injury, and be able to say, okay, when I but my right hamstring is sore, and then I do a hard hill workout, of course that's going to make the hamstring even more sore. So it's good to write that down so that you know I'm in that situation right now. I just did a race on Sunday in Golden Gate Park right here, a 4-mile cross-country race, and my right hamstring is sore. And I know if I go out and do a run on Monday, I'm going to be could be weeks of hamstring issues. So I told myself, okay, I'm going to swim, not run. And then the next day, my hamstring was still sore, so I stayed away from running. I thought, okay, I'm going to swim the second day and wait for this to get better and do the foam roller and do other things. And so I was answering that question myself, able to address, you know, avoiding that injury issue. So asking that question can really help your athletes to keep from getting injured. And here's a really important one I wanted to emphasize to your athletes. Who can I ask for help when I need it? Who can I ask for help when I need it? So this is a really important one for all people to know. I mean, of course, they can come to you. You want them to be able to come to you to do a session. But, you know, let's say it's in the middle of the night or in the middle of the week, and they need to also have a support system in place. And who can ask for help when I need it, and also an emergency situation. Maybe it's a parent they could go to. Maybe it's a good friend. Maybe it's their coach, their physical athletic coach. If you're in your case, like with Matt, I know you're their physical coach, maybe, and the mental coach. They could come to you for both of those things. By asking that question, then the person can outline who they are, who they feel they can trust, and who they feel they can come to. It's good to have them make a list of those people so that if one person is not available, they could go to another one. So just developing that list of a support group can really help an athlete feel solid inside and feel like they can have a sense of what where they can go for their for the different issues. And it might be different things. You know, they might go to their sports medicine doctor if they've got an injury. If they need psychological help, they can come to you. It might be that they trust people for different kinds of expertise. It might be for a parent. They might not feel comfortable with their parents if there's a lot of issues are going on there. So he's just asking that so that they can know who they can go to help with and then help develop those kind of relationships. You might go to a teammate or a friend that they appear they can talk to also. So being able to develop those relationships, if they don't have a lot, then help them to have the skills to develop those. So that's a good question. And then another one I would just want to ask is, have your athletes ask, how do I know the difference between good advice and advice that might hinder me? You know, it's really important to have them develop a sense of critical thinking and not just taking the first piece of advice that they get. But, you know, if they go on the internet, you can get all kinds of advice, good and bad, and it's not always, we need to teach our athletes to evaluate where is the source coming from. And you know, we're hearing these days now, if you Google something, it's there's big lawsuits now about the problem with when you do a search on something, it's the companies that paid the most for advertising or for getting to the top. That's not necessarily the best information that comes up, but it's you get the information from the companies that paid the most for advertising. So it's important to help athletes to evaluate the difference between good advice and advice that that might hinder you. And you know, coming back to having sources of people that they can trust, and hopefully you are one of the people that they can trust the most. So. So those are some questions, and I'll send you these too. That are one other one I wanted to just mention to ask: am I challenging my technique under pressure in different training environments? So not just you know, most of us train in a safe environment or the same environment over and over again, but you want to be able to, you know, have athletes work in different environments where there's different kinds of pressure. So, you know, if you're running, you know, running up hills or running on speed track, running with, if it's a group, a sport, a team sports, it might be, you know, some coaches play booing sounds in a stadium so that the athletes know what it's like to be booed by the crowd, because that might be a pressure that they have to deal with. So there's all kinds of pressures, asking the athlete what kind of pressures might you encounter. Might be, you know, an athlete showing up right at the last minute. Oh, I can't believe she is here. I can't believe he's here. You know, your nemesis or person that, you know, always beats you. Those kind of pressures, imagine, work with them on the court or on the field, as well as in your office with visualization. You can visualize so many more different situations than maybe you could practice. So have them imagine these pressures and different training environments, and then how they're going to respond to those. And, you know, outline what are the pressures that they might feel. So those are some questions I wanted to share with you. And, yeah, let me just open up the reach out to all of you and tell me what kinds of things are questions or comments, other things that I could answer for you, or things that you relate to with this. I don't know, Michelle or Evan or Alicia or Matt?
Yeah, I don't want to get down a rabbit hole here, but you said something, critical thinking, and that's, I just think, so important. I do deal with clients who have been on the interweb quite a bit lately, and that seems to be a growing trend where they're sort of self-diagnosing issues or symptoms. And I had one guy with sciatic nerve damage that was, you know, following along with what's called Mobility WOD, which is a pretty popular mobility site. And the information on there wasn't bad, but the problem was that it wasn't specific, and so he was making his sciatica worse. By the time he saw me, he had done some nerve damage, putting actual compression onto the sciatic nerve, for example. So, you know, we had a talk about that recently, and it's hard because it's hard to know what you shouldn't listen to and what you should. And, you know, I just, as a suggestion, I just told him, well, you know, first of all, if you're getting good information, make sure that you're doing a little bit of research, make sure that it is specific to you, make sure they're not just trying to sell you something, make sure that that person has been around for a while, has proven results with other clients, so on and so forth. But when it comes to the individual approach, I know there's a lot of clients that they need to address those specific needs of theirs, and it's not a general approach they can take. So even good general information out there isn't always working so well for our individuals. Of course, with mindset, that's a whole nother rabbit hole to go into, where what IQ one athlete on will work really well, another athlete doesn't work at all. So any ideas on how we can educate our clients to have better critical thinking with all of this sort of overflow of mass information, much of which I feel like is useless.
Oh, yeah, I think so, too. I agree with you, Matt. And so how to educate with clients on athletes and how to do that critical thinking, I guess asking rather than just looking at what comes up first on your phone or on a search for something. It's good to ask, you know, where is the source, who is the source, where is this information coming from? Is it a place you can trust? I think that research that comes out of universities or educational organizations is typically better than someplace else. So a website that ends in .edu is going to be typically a university website. They can search on something like university studies on their topic. So rather than just putting in sciatic nerve or something, if you put that in, yeah, you're going to come up with all these ads. I think it's better to search something like university research studies on a particular topic, because you get more unbiased research where they're really trying to find out what the best the problem is, and to not click on the ads. Usually when you do a Google search, at the very top it'll say ad, and at the very bottom the two or three items there will have a little square around it that says ad, and I think it's better not to click on those, because those are paid ads that they're not necessarily they're just information that someone's paid a lot of money to get onto Google, but they're not verified at all. Google, from the research that I read, Google doesn't, or the search engines don't verify, if their information is true or not. They just put them up according to how much money they've paid. So better to not click on the information that says ads, and do click on information that's .edu or sometimes .gov is government studies from the National Institute of Health, which may be more well funded in terms of finding the right answers, and then asking to not spend so much time on the internet. I think that kids are in general spending way too much time on the phone and on reading things on the internet, a lot of which, as you say, Matt, is not true, and so they tend to, if they read something over and over again, they think, oh, this must be true, but it's better to come to work with an expert like you, like all of us are in this program, and if they have a specific physical ailment, then go to a care practitioner that they trust and find someone in the area. And the best way to find one is to ask other friends who they trust and who they work with, who they like, as opposed to just what ads come up on the internet. So chiropractors can be helpful. I know Feldenkrais is a really effective therapy that's gentle and effective for many different illnesses. It's called Feldenkrais, Feldenkrais, and those, if you look for Feldenkrais practitioners, those tend to be just really well-trained people. And you can look up also Feldenkrais exercises for a particular injury, and you'll find a lot of helpful exercises there that tend to be helpful for getting over things. So, that's a really good question, Matt, and I want to maybe address that more. We could address that more on our next call, too. So, that's coming up on the second, fourth Thursday of the month. So, the next one will be the 26th of September. If you can all write that down. And so, hopefully that's helpful, Matt, to give you some ideas, And also it's good to ask, are other people saying the same thing? You know, kind of if you see one, you know, piece of advice that's way out there, it's that doesn't match with other things that you've read, then, you know, chances are it's not, you know, being supported by other organizations. So it's good to, you know, have a piece of information that's verified, that you see that it's other, you know, several experts are saying the same thing. And I think it's good to put something like, oftentimes I know that if you write in a question, you know, if you type in, are cigarettes good for you, they're gonna come up with all these ads that say, yeah, cigarettes are good for you, because that's big, you know, the Google's algorithms are set up to answer that question, but which is crazy. You know, we all know that tobacco is really horrible for you. But if you write, I tend to put pros and cons of something, so that you get both sides of an issue. So that's a good way to do a search for something too. Pros and cons of eating beets for athletes, and you get the whatever it is that you want to search on, so that you get the advantages, or you can write advantages and disadvantages of something, and then you'll get different views on things. That's a good way to do a search on an item. So yeah, hopefully that helps. And yeah, so we want to close. We'll do our next call on September the 26th. Hopefully these questions, thank you so much for your questions here. This is great. And maybe we can just, those of you who are still on the call, to do what are our takeaways? If you could say something that was helpful for you for this, for our discussion today, something that you maybe learned or was helpful, a nugget that you could take away with you. Anyone can answer. I don't know if Lisa, are you still there, or Matt and Evan and Michelle?
Yeah, sure. I'll go. I wanted to just real quickly say that if you are dealing with athletes, just on my side of the field where I deal as a strength coach in LMT, there is a website. It's called, I think it's Stronger by Science, by Mass, M-A-S-S. And that actually has been really useful. It's all scientifically proven studies that they post on there. And so it can be helpful for athletes to use that site. That's the one that I really trust the most. They have it reviewed by experts in the field. So the only things that are on that site are approved science-based nutrition studies, exercise physiology studies, those type of things. So that's something maybe that you can refer to athletes on, at least on the training side of things, if they're looking for good evidence-based research.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, so Stronger by Science.
Yeah, I just looked it up as we were talking. It's strongerbyscience.com. It's under Mass, M-A-S-S, but I have a link to it, so I never actually put in the website, but that's what it's called, strongerbyscience.com. So that's just what I use myself to look at the latest research, you know, and again, like you said, things that are done by universities, studies that are done by, you know, legitimate facilities and not being sponsored by, say, Gatorade or something like that. So I trust that site.
Yeah. Okay, great. Thank you, Matt. Yeah, StrongerByScience.com. It's a good resource there. Thank you. And, I've found... I can put up some other resources as well. So that's helpful, and it's good to find websites that you trust. Sometimes, if it's a particular doctor that's, putting add up, sometimes chiropractors, they're very good chiropractors, and then there's some that are just, factories kind of thing that are just interested in kind of doing a lot of ads and running people through really quickly that aren't as good. So sometimes you have to, with chiropractors and doctors, good to have a referral from another friend that you trust, someone else. So, so I'll put up some other resources there for her websites also. And, anyone else that's, I don't know if people might have to leave the call, but are other people there, Alicia or Michelle or Evan?
This is Evan.
Hi, Evan. Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry, I was there, but I was on mute and I couldn't unmute. I don't know why when you asked. So no problem. I just listened to everything. That was super interesting. I love just the variety of questions that you proposed. I think it's, I'm a life and business coach on the side, and I use a lot of questioning, and I tend to forget it a little bit when I'm doing the mental training, because we have some techniques to offer, but I think there's gold in just asking questions and having the athletes just reflect and connect to, the way they think, what they feel, and find their own solutions in a way. So these were great examples, and just appreciated the discussions, on the slumps from Matt. I wanted to add, I couldn't unmute, but maybe I was dealing with an athlete, a swimmer, going through a slump, and we worked on, what you said at the beginning, asking why are they doing their sport, what they want to get out of it. Coming back to that, and often it's get some fun. Enjoy the journey rather than the destination, that can help. And with that swimmer, we just tried to take it step by step, make smaller goals and, making a distance that she's really enjoying and having fun with, not the most difficult one, and setting a goal not to do her best, but to come back close to her best. And then at some point you have a question, do you want to continue or not? Sometimes we don't dare ask that question because we feel like it could be a failure to just quit, but at some point you might want to ask that, do I want to continue? I'm not talking about quitting sports, but just quitting maybe the competition or the high, like what we want to get out of that. And for this swimmer at the end of the year, she decided to stop this high intense twice a day training. Because that was her choice, and she felt relief with that. But then she's going to continue to swim, on a regular basis, smaller competition, just to keep the fun of sports, but just left the top level. And I think sometimes we just don't dare approach this question, and maybe there's value in doing that. And then just on Alice's questions, I totally agree with what you said. My approach would be address the fear. Have the person really feel, what's going, like being present to, okay, what if I miss? Be there so that they can see. It's like watching the monster under the bed when we're scared, when we're a kid. We don't dare to watch because, we think there's a monster. But once we watch and it's our fear, just acting this way. But when we watch under the bed, well, there's nothing. So I think really facing that fear and, okay, and then what, and then what, and then what, and then being present to that is a great way. But then just visualizing, the positive, what you want to see happen. I know Novak Djokovic, a tennis player, when he got back from his injury at the elbow and surgery, for a month he couldn't play at his best. Confidence was not there, so it took him maybe a year to come back. And he was visualizing himself doing great, making perfect moves, like hitting the ball great, even if it was not happening on the court, because after the surgery, his moves were different. But he kept visualizing himself. And it takes time sometimes, to get used to that. And then last example, maybe because I'm present to that for myself, I did skydiving again 2 weeks ago, and I hadn't jumped for 14 years, and that was super scary. And so I just said, you know, I want to go back there, and I had to really face my fear, and I didn't want to watch the backups, like, you know, all the malfunctions, videos, and everything, but then I say, okay, let's get there, let's do that, let's see what might happen, let's get prepared, let's feel that, that doesn't feel good, but let's go there. And then when I was in the plane, I was just focusing on having fun, relaxing, just focused on a couple of things I would need to do just in case, but not trying to, you know, picture everything that can go wrong. And because it's skydiving, everything is amplified, but I think it's true for anything. So for the volleyball player, backup scenarios, you know, what might happen. And then when on the court, just getting these pictures, when they pop into the mind, just leave them aside. See a great serve, and just be ready to accept that it might not be the case. All right, that's it for me. Sorry, I did everything at the end. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you, Evan. Oh, my gosh. That's great. Yeah, you had a good summary of lots of things here. And congratulations on going up and skydiving after all this time, I guess. I used to do skydiving as well. And when you're young, it's one thing, you don't have as much fear, I think, in general about things. But as we get older, it's more of a challenge, right? It can be.
Yep.
So that's great that you were able to do that, and it's and just to say, okay, I'm gonna have the attitude. Let's see what might happen. Let's do it. Have fun, and it's like going through, well, that phrase I guess we hear too much: feel the fear and do it anyway. jumping, moving through the fear, as opposed to running away from it.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. So, it's a great feeling. I had a experience with scuba diving where I hadn't done it in a long time, and then went out and did that, and we were going down 90 feet, and I was really panicking and scared that I couldn't breathe. I couldn't let the breath out because I was fearful and not trusting in my equipment. But then I just took a deep breath and said, okay, just breathe deep, breathe, and move down. I had a friend hold my hand, and it's all about just relaxing through it and feeling like you can, trusting. And there's something that is really rewarding about that when you approach a fearful situation and then you just go into it. And so that could be with Alicia. I don't know if she's still on the call, but you can approach it that way of just walking, kind of right, walking into the fear, just going, moving into it, moving, you know, leaning. We hear this term leaning in these days, lean into the fear, and then be able to, by doing that, there's so much more value that can come out on the other side. When you just stay safe and stay at home and don't try anything, yeah, it's okay, but you don't grow nearly as much. So you can say to yourself, I'm growing with this. I'm learning so much. I'm going to be a much better person walking into the fear and coming out of the fear and being okay doing this thing, right? So, yeah, how about having fun with fear? Yeah. All right, well, thank you, everyone. Thanks so much for joining, and we'll talk to you next time on September the 26th, on the fourth Thursday at 9 o'clock. Thank you, and have a great day, and I'll have this recording up shortly.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Sure.
Thank you.
All right. Sure. Okay, bye now.